Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Palillo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. On today's episode, Lance McCullers ramps up, but the statements that got our attention most weren't about pitching. We'll talk about the latest on Altuve and left field. Specifically, is that still a thing? And what's up with the contradictory statements that are coming out of the front office and players? We'll dig into it. Gents, the most newsy things to come out of spring training is Lance McCullers continues to ramp up. He's throwing bullpen sessions now. His next step is facing live batters. Then rehab starts probably, and then maybe back to the big club. So we'll see. But how much hope do you think fans should hold out for Lance to pitch meaningful innings this season?
Better chance than any of us hitting the Powerball. There's that. But I would not want to put any eggs in the Lance McCullers Jr. basket. I mean, if it's the Easter egg hunt and you find a bunch of eggs, terrific. But don't plan your diet around them. Lance McCullers should be treated as found money. Too far gone from having pitched, period, in the major leagues. 30 years old now, coming back from one major arm injury after another. Well, when is the next one, even if he does make it back? So to count on him would be plain old silly, but there's nothing wrong with maintaining a little bit of hope.
Yeah, it's wait and see, right? The good news is that the timeline they gave him for when he should be able to return, they're pretty much on track for that. He also talked about where his velocity was compared to past years, where his velo was in spring training, and it's about where it was. So the good news is everything we're hearing from Lance is it sounds all really positive. We just got to hope that he can stay healthy. And we have to keep in mind, too, his contract's not up after this year. He's still on the books for another season. So it would really be a big deal if the Astros could get something out of McCullers in these final 2 years of his contract.
It was also interesting, too, him talking about him changing his mechanics as well, as they found some what he called red flags in his delivery that they hope create some more efficiency and less strain on the arm. We heard Dana Brown float the idea of Lance out of the bullpen, but apparently he hadn't floated that by McCullers himself, because McCullers says, I don't know where that came from. He told this to Chandler Rome. People say, well, just make him a reliever. That's not an easy thing to do. It's not a fallback position. It's doing a disservice to the guys who are in that role. It's very specific and very hard. Pitching back to back or 3 out of 4 for me is physically harder. Those are things we've all pointed out. The grind of the bullpen is a real concern for a guy coming off of multiple arm surgeries. I saw some fan comments to the effect of, oh, he wants to remain a starter because that's where the money's at. Edwin Diaz and Josh Hader would like a word. But we do want to circle back to that comment in just a second. Just a quick message, if you are a business owner and you'd like us to help spread the word about your service or product, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. It was interesting reading McCullers' comments about the CBT. He had some comments saying, you know, he didn't think the Dodgers were doing anything wrong with all that deferred money. What I found most intriguing was he said that some teams use the CBT as a cap and other teams view it as a penalty. He said Crane specifically referred to it as a cap. it's funny because looking back when Dana Brown first got to the Astros, he came in talking a big game about re-signing players like Tucker and Fromber. Then Tucker gets moved in the offseason. Bregman leaves in free agency. Fromber Valdez told the media just a few days ago that his rep hasn't spoken to the team about an extension. Is Lance McCullers saying the quiet part out loud about this team's philosophy on spending and team building?
There's an element of it. I do want to add that Lance wanted to start because that's where the money is. He has all his money. He's made $34 million the last two seasons to make sure the cappuccino maker's working. And I ought to also add that, well, where did that come from? Dana Brown, the general manager. Do you owe it to address every item with the player individually? Oh, no, but it's probably good form. On the other hand, you know, Pat Riley and Jimmy Butler and that whole saga with the Miami Heat would apparently just drove Jimmy Butler off the deep end was when Pat Riley had the temerity to call Butler out, who after the playoffs last season said, well, if I'd played, we'd have won. And Pat Riley said, well, you didn't play, so you may want to keep your mouth shut. Lance, to be choosy, oh, I'm only a starter. Yeah, and Titus Howard is only a right tackle for the Texans. Get healthy, pitch at any performance level as a major leaguer, and then we'll see about your role. You're also not grandfathered into the gig that the moment McCullers comes back, he's going to be good and just blow past established members, healthy and performing in the Astros starting rotation. All right, having said all that, the Astros are a little bit in between. You have the Yankees, who are way more revenue rich than the Astros, but they're unwilling to go beyond certain tax thresholds. The Dodgers obviously do not care whatsoever. The Mets do not care whatsoever. The Red Sox just got back in the business of paying tax with the Alex Bregman signing. But you have one half to two thirds of the franchises that the CBT is absolutely irrelevant. 2 years of Oakland A's payroll, Pittsburgh Pirates payroll, Miami Marlins, they're not going to get to the CBT. So it's a certain number of teams that are impacted. The Phillies have paid repeatedly. The Astros are clearly very much trying to avoid paying repeatedly because of the steepening of the penalties. So, yeah, there's some truth, I think, to what Lance McCullers says, specifically relevant to the Astros. But no one should thus portray Jim Crane as a cheapskate. Their payroll has been no lower than number 11. It's been as high as in the top five over the last six, 7 years. And we keep circling back to it because it's the truth. If they didn't have $65 million dead dollars on this season's payroll, they'd have more money to invest in the major league roster. Now, one could absolutely argue, advocate, say, hey, you know, you need to treat that as sunk costs. Your mistakes, you're going to allow to damage the 2025 ball club? Well, yes, that is the route they have elected to go.
I don't know if it's that quiet of a thing with the Astros, whereas Jim Crane's really only gone over it like one time. So they've typically stayed under the tax threshold, so I expect them to continue doing that. As far as McCullers and pitching out of the bullpen, I mean, I'm with Charlie that, yeah, you don't just get to come in and call your shot, but I'm also like, this dude knows something about being hurt, and if he thinks it puts more stress on his arm, having to pitch back-to-back days, not knowing when you're going to get called upon, then I think you just try and play it a little cautious here. I mean, he's spent so much time on the injured list. Let's just try and get him healthy, and if this is the way he'll feel the most comfortable, then I say just lean into that. But yeah, the communication stuff's been really odd with the Astros lately. And remember last year, Bregman had reportedly some issues with the communication when they were moving him down in the batting order about a text message. And now we have Lance McCullers and him not hearing about the bullpen stuff and Altuve kind of going back and forth about whether he was asked to move to left field or if it was his idea to do it to, you know, compensate for Bregman coming back. It's just really, it's really odd. Is it the Astros being guarded like you brought up, Brandon, like they always are? Or is there something going on where these guys just, they're not all on the same page?
Yeah, exactly. And I want to get to that too. Beyond just the CBT, there's also a growing trend of deferred money. Just look as recently as Alex Bregman, lots of deferred money in that contract. We look at Crane saying that as long as he's the owner, that this team was always going to be a contender. Well, looking at the state of the franchise, looking at the fact that they're not willing to take on long-term debt, which would devalue the net worth of the franchise, is maybe Jim Crane telling us about the length of ownership that he has left with the Houston Astros?
I don't think so. I mean, he hasn't given any sort of succession plan, whether it's going to his kids and so forth. And Jim Crane is approaching 70, not there yet, but it's not like he's in his mid-80s, and I think he can still buy some green bananas. I just think that the Astros are at the tail end of this glorious run. They are still contenders. So for 2025, at least, the window is still open. Now, when this wave of Mariners prospects gets to the major leagues, if a good batting average of them succeed, it's going to get tougher for the Astros if their minor league system remains largely for hunger and isn't generating a next generation of stars. Because without that, the only way to sustain a real good ball club is to pay through the nose for it by acquiring talent from the outside in the free agent market specifically. So I just, in part, the Astros are being victimized by their own success. The last 8 years, so stupendous. The last 2 years, not as good as the 6 years before that. But it's not always going to be flow. There's going to be some ebb. Look at the Atlanta Braves presently in the National League.
What are they going to do with all this extra money when it does come off the books? When Abreu comes off, when Montero comes off, we don't think that they're going to pay Fromber. That's $18 million a year coming off the books. How are the Astros going to use those resources to improve the club? And yeah, they're still competitive, but they're competitive like we think they could win the division. Kind of like with the Texans, like, okay, the Texans can win the AFC South. But I don't think we were thinking, oh, this is, you know, that they're going to knock off the Chiefs or the Ravens. They aren't quite at that level. And the Astros, I don't think, are quite at that level to where you just kind of pencil them into the ALCS every year anymore. They've taken a little bit of a step back, but that happens. Every year you can't spin like that unless you're the Dodgers. So you're going to have to be smart with it, strategic, plan your spot to push all your chips in the middle of the table.
And for all that, they're projected to be the third winningest team in the American League this season. It's not a DEFCON level 5 that everyone has walked out the door and there's no talent remaining. They're, if not quite a shell of what they used to be, closer to that perhaps than what they used to be, but they're not nothing.
Yeah, I guess the difference, I would think, Josh, and where the Texans are at and the Astros going into the season last year, I think there were a lot of people that thought that the Texans were positioned to make a run and be a contender. It was the injuries that really kind of knocked them back down to earth. Whereas you look at this roster now for the Astros, and you look and now we're saying, well, maybe they compete. And that's with the opening day roster. We're not even talking about injuries. So there would be some real depth concerns here. Can the Astros take on the amount of injuries that they have in the past and still be a contender? I think we'll probably get into that in our next episode. I want to circle back to something you mentioned, Josh, was part of the Bregman saga and fallout from that was the idea of Altuve playing left field being brought to the service. Altuve told Brian McTaggart this week that the team approached him after last season about playing left field. Now, which that's something new. We had heard that wasn't the case. We'll get back to that again. The team says they haven't committed to anything. That's a pretty fitting statement. However, Altuve is taking reps in left field now to open spring training. Do you think the reality of Altuve playing any substantive time out in left field this year ended with Bregman's departure? And do you think that's a good thing?
I think they're playing it like, go see what it looks like, right? We're not going to know. See how it looks this spring. See if Altuve adjusts quickly. He's willing to do it. He just wants to be in the lineup and hit. That's where he's at right now, which is great. He's a team first guy. You know, if it looks bad in left field, then they just won't play him out there. But I do think they want to improve the defense on the club if they can. If they can get Dubon out there, we mentioned it before, Hunter Brown, Fromber, all those ground balls, make your infield as strong as possible. So perhaps they give it a shot. But if it's not working, it's not working. But in conjunction with this is Yordan Alvarez basically being cool with being a regular DH. And I think that's probably the right move. I don't think he's that bad in left field, but you just hold your breath every time when it comes to injuries with Yordan. He, you know, he slides into second base and hurts himself. Especially that left field at what was Minute Maid Park. That's a hard outfield. I could, you know, you see guys get really banged up colliding into that wall. I don't want Yordan subjected to that. That makes sense to me.
Yordan's playing, I'll guess, 40 games max in the outfield. 53 starts last season. The Astros are on record. Yeah, we don't want him approaching that this year. Jordan likes to get out there. It can get boring just sitting in the dugout the whole game. But I think he understands their thinking on that. Altuve would not be a good left fielder, but that's different from being a bad left fielder. We talked about his throwing arm, which absolutely will be a liability, small Daikin Park, notwithstanding. Going over to the left field line to cut balls off, guys will be running those into doubles on him. Towards center field, runners will be going first to third, cruising when Altuve's the guy having to make the throw. But you don't want him at second base for anywhere near 145 games. One, all the metrics show, and the Astros even contemplating this, I think, delivers the proof in the pudding. In their view, he's now a bad defensive second baseman. No doubt about it, Mauricio Dubon is a better defensive second baseman. But unless Dubon takes a leap offensively, you don't want him having 500 plate appearances. He's a poor offensive player. He bulked up, I guess, 10 pounds in the offseason. I don't think bulking up helps you draw walks and get your on-base percentage over 300. If he hits a couple more home runs, great. But what is the juggle, right? If they decide, okay, Altuve, 100 games at second base, Jordan, 40 in left field, and then you're just filling in Dubon, Gamel. Are you going to have to cover a lot? Because McCormick, only one season in his career has he done anything but suck against right-handed pitching, 2023. Where is he going to fall? What is Jake Myers going to do? How many subpar, way subpar offensive bats can you handle? Six down in the lineup. Second base, I think, generally is thought of as a more defensively important position than left field. So if you're going to sacrifice it one versus the other, especially given the small left field at Daikin Park, I will note Dubon, while starting fewer than half the games in left field, he tied for the league lead in errors as a left fielder last season. But will Dubon, will they want him in the starting lineup so much to say, okay, you're the primary second baseman, Altuve, you're the primary left fielder? I don't know how this is going to shake out. And I have a definitive answer defensively. I mean, which would you prefer? If it was only one, Altuve's going to play all left field or all second base, Dubon vice versa. Which way would you go? And are you making the same decision on the preponderance of playing time? Because neither guy's going to play only one versus the other.
And it does beg the question, because we've heard the Astros say they don't want to play Jordan as much in left, but need may dictate that he play there more than they want him to, because you're going to need to work Altuve into the DH spot as well. What do you think of Jordan's comments about wanting to hit in one spot in the lineup? We just saw that quote come through just a little bit ago. What do you think about his thoughts of pick a spot for me to hit and I'll hit there in the lineup?
I think it's normal, and he wasn't at all belligerent about it, but he expressed his preference for slot me wherever, and I'll ride with it. Most of us are creatures of habit. Certainly many, many, many athletes, some to the point of OCD or superstition. Others really just like the routine. You like preparing, knowing you're coming up top or bottom of the first inning in this spot. The obvious related question is, well, then do you go with Alvarez in the two hole or the three hole? Good news, bad news. There's no issue to grapple with about splitting left-handed hitters in the top portion of the lineup now.
I think this is kind of speaks to a bigger issue with how the Astros approach their plate appearances last year. And they've talked about one of the goals this year is to be more patient. And if I'm reading between the lines here a little bit with Jordan, I think he didn't like Altuve seeing one pitch, and then he was immediately in the batter's box, like right after the game started. We saw so much of that where Altuve just swings out of his shoes trying to hope he gets a fastball to start a game. And, you know, if he just pops it out to left field, which he does a lot, or turns it over into a ground ball, Jordan's seen one pitch, and he's in the batter's box. And not a lot of opportunities in that first set through the lineup to drive in any runs when that happens. So I think that's part of it. Based on these comments, I think we're going to see him hitting third more than second because of what I said about Altuve. And I'd like to see Altuve be a little more patient. It's not working like it used to a few years ago. The opposing pitchers know what he's looking to do. So I think it's time to pivot a little bit here, and maybe that'll help Altuve see a bounce back in his numbers.
Yeah, you throw a first pitch strike to Altuve, you're a clown on the mound, really. I think it's quite simple. Jordan hits third. Altuve's going to lead off. Isak Paredes is going to slot in the two hole. He was lousy after going to the Cubs last season, so he finished the year batting 238. Yeah, well, his on-base percentage was 31 points higher than Alex Bregman's last season. Batting 236, Isak Paredes' on-base percentage was higher than Yiner Diaz batting 299 because of the epidemic of free swinging. Altuve at least gave good overall results, 350 on-base percentage with good power. Remember, Yiner's home run power went down the drain for long stretches last season. So walking less than once per week as a cleanup hitter, not good. Dubon went in there, hardly ever walks. Jeremy Pena walks once per week. It's a problem. So in the idea of getting traffic on for Yordan in that first inning, it's Altuve 1, Paredes 2, Yordan 3, Christian Walker 4, Yiner 5, probably Pena 6, and then you can figure out Kuklefran and Ollie 7, 8, 9.
Speaking of outfield, another option that they have is Ben Gamel, who they brought back. His on-base percentage was 384 last season. So just something to think about. It's a small sample size for sure, but it is a sample. Josh, I definitely want to circle back to what you raised just a few minutes ago, because one of the puzzling threads that kind of winds its way through all of these topics is seemingly the inconsistency in the stories between the front office, the players, and the media. We start with Altuve initially saying he hadn't spoke with the team about playing left field. Well, now he's saying that they approached him after last season about it. Dana Brown riffing about McCullers possibly being a reliever, only for McCullers to just say, I don't know where that's come from. So, and you also brought up the frustrations that Bregman supposedly had last season about communications. And I think that had to do with lineup and where you were going to play. So do you think these inconsistencies, I want to go back to the question that you posed. Do you think these inconsistencies are about communication issues internally? Or do you think this is just the Astros being super guarded with information as they have a history to do? Or is it something else or a mixture? What do you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I'll go mixture. Some people are just so sensitive. But in the spirit of direct communication, I mean, that Altuve 180'd with what he said, to me, clearly the team addressed it with him, unless he corrects what he said much more recently. McCullers, I have to say, get healthy where you can actually pitch in a big league game, and then we'll talk. If Dana Brown was just being forthcoming in speaking extemporaneously with the media, I don't have a problem with that myself. But given who you're dealing with, maybe let me hold my tongue. And next time we get together, I'll speak further to that. But I want to speak to the party and fall first.
I think part of it, too, Dana Brown just says stuff. It's not always true. It's, you know, it just might occur to him in the moment. I'm not saying that he's trying to be deceptive on purpose, but he just says stuff. Oh, Kyle Tucker, he's going to retire as an Astro. You know, Alex Bregman's our top priority in free agency. Oh, Lance McCullers, maybe the bullpen's a possibility. I think he just says things. I also think there's an agent part of this because Bregman, a Boris guy, McCullers is a Boris guy, Altuve's a Boris guy. I just wonder if was Boris using these outlets as leverage in the Bregman negotiations to try and make teams re-engage, thinking that the Astros could be back in it and that they could move Altuve, and it was put out through those channels, or was this something the Astros really came and asked him to do? I'm not sure. I don't know how big of an advantage that is, though, to keep it quiet about Altuve possibly playing left field. You're going to see him out there in spring training shagging balls. I don't know if that's some kind of top secret information you don't want getting out there, but it just, you know, Espada was a first-year manager last year. Dana Brown is pretty new to being a GM, only done it a few years. So maybe they're just some of the growing pains that you're going to see as these guys kind of get used to having these jobs.
I think there's an element of there's more uncertainty about the quality of this ball club than we've had in quite a while around here. And maybe that just has tempers or nerves frayed a little bit more than they would have if the same circumstances had occurred 3-4 years ago.
And behind the scenes, is there a Bagwell and Dana Brown don't see things the same way? Or, you know, just some, not that they don't get along, but maybe they just don't agree on everything. And maybe there is some kind of back and forth on what they want for their players. And it's kind of showing to where the players aren't really sure exactly what their role is going to be.
Josh, to your point, it was interesting thinking back on Bagwell's comments about the Tucker trade. He seemed to distance himself from that trade and said that Jim Crane and Dana Brown did a good job of handling that situation. So I did find that funny because he normally speaks a lot of we in his updates about the team. And that was a more of a they comment. And it also is funny thinking back to Dana Brown's first comments when he got to the team about extending Tucker and Fromm or you know, extending guys early like Pena. He said he told Jim Crane to buckle up. I think the opposite is true. I think Jim Crane is telling Dana Brown he needs to buckle up because it could be a bumpy ride over the next few seasons. Any final thoughts before we're out the door, guys?
Spring training games start Saturday. No one should overreact to results. Justin Dearden, a phenomenon two seasons ago, and Joey Loperfido last spring. There will be some notable players to at least pay heed to. Does Jake Myers look like a major league hitter? Chaz McCormick rebound beyond good in batting practice before spring training games even start. And Hayden Wesneski, you know, keeping the ball in Grapefruit League parks as he gets first dibs on the fifth spot in the starting rotation.
Yeah, for me, it's Paredes and Walker. Like, these are the new guys, right? And they're guys you should be excited about. They've shown some success in this league before. And Astros can certainly use the help at first and third base. They're going to hit in the top part of the lineup. I want to see, can they have a lineup that's as impactful 4 through 5 at the top of the order as they've had in the past? And, you know, Jeremy Pena, can he be a guy that hits sixth in a lineup that you actually feel good about it? We're expecting, it'd be nice to see a big year from Pena.
Indeed. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you're watching on YouTube, again, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast on places like Apple or Spotify, do us a solid and give us a 5-star rating there. Josh, Charlie, and I will be dropping our next episode on Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. And make sure you subscribe to the channel so that you'll get notifications as soon as that new episode drops. Make sure you're also subscribed to Sports Map Texans, as we'll have content there as news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, until next time, go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.